Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, Episode 16, and I'm your host, Nick Ortego. Chance the Rapper is doing something for educators that should have been done a long time ago. Plus, how are teachers talking about DACA? And New York City has decided all students deserve free lunch. We'll tell you why. Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each week, we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education. Plus, we speak with a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. Many Houston schools are back in session after dealing with the challenges of Hurricane Harvey, but what's it like for those teachers and students? We're talking with a Houston teacher to get a firsthand account. Hey everybody, Nick Ortego here, and I'm joined with student data ninja Tyler Cummings of School Status and teacher extraordinaire Lissa Pruitt. Lissa, how are you doing?
I'm great.
Tyler, how are you doing over there?
Great. Thanks for having me back again.
I learned something about you, Tyler. I learned that you actually announce football games on Friday nights.
What?
Yep. Yes. I am the voice of the Jaguars, DeSoto Central High School up in South Haven, Mississippi.
Wow.
That is so cool. You do have a great voice. You should be on a podcast.
Maybe I should. I'll look into that.
Is that hard? I've always wanted, I like to do announcing, but I don't know enough about football.
Yeah. And you know, you got to know the kids a little bit. I'm not the play-by-play guy, so I don't do any of that stuff, but I know, you know, when they, first and 10, first and five, third and long. I got in trouble last year for being a little bit too excited about the home team. You're supposed to be impartial, and I tried. I'm not impartial.
Well, let me. I'm going to put you on the spot, and I might have to pot down the mic a little bit. But like, DeSoto scores. What do you do?
It would be. Touchdown, Jaguars!
That's great.
Whatever the kid's name is, number 10. That's number 10 in for the touchdown, or whoever that is. And I don't remember who they all are right off the top of my head.
Love it. Love
it. Wait, so since you're a data ninja, are you that guy that like can spout out stats about certain kids?
That is not me. No.
Gotcha. No. He teaches people how to use data.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Limits on the ninja. Got it.
All right. Let's go ahead and kick off the teacher's lounge. Lissa, you've got one of my favorite stories, I think, ever coming up here. What do you know?
Well, we're talking about Chance the Rapper. And now I know you're laughing at me because...
You're talking about Chance the Rapper.
I'm talking about Chance the Rapper, making a huge impact on education, especially in the Chicago area. Chance is known as the King of Chicago. Many refer to him that way. Raised in Chicago, lives in Chicago, and is, you know, speaking out and putting his money where his mouth is about education and funding public schools in the Chicago area. He's just announced that he's also going to make a kind of an award show called the Twilight Awards.
It's like the Grammys.
For teachers. I'm sorry, not just teachers, educators, principals, students that are leaders in their school and communities. So he wants, it'll be an award show, but it also has some special performances in between.
So who's the host? Is it Chance the Rapper?
No, it's James Corbin from Carpool Karaoke.
That's a big name.
I know.
That's cool.
And they're supposed to, and there's like secret performances. So he's not really announcing the performances of the Twilight Awards.
Is this on TV? Do we know?
It will be, and it's due to take place in June of 2018. So it's coming up,
okay.
And he wants it to be a yearly award ceremony that just really gets, you know, Chance feels like industries in communities have got to put back into public schools. We can't just rely on state funding and taxes that if you're a big business in an area, you should be putting back into. So, like, in the Chicago area, he's gotten like Ticketmaster and the Bulls and different, you know, big business that he's encouraged to give back to public schools. And he just recently announced his New Chance Foundation, which...
It's a clever name.
Yes. he met with, or he chose 20 schools, and he's giving $100,000 to each of those 20 schools. But what the cool thing was is he met with each of the principals of those schools and said, you know, what would you do with the money? Let me see your vision for your school, because he wants every school to be unique. He doesn't want to give $100,000 to every school and say it's got to be used for this. And so it's really neat what these principals are doing. Like, one is setting up like a radio broadcast and doing a lot of, you know, photography and journalism and doing that kind of, those kind of classes with the money. And another one's doing more dance and ballet. Another is doing visual arts.
I think that's amazing. Like, this award show, if I understand it right, it's not just for the Chicago area. It'd be for the whole country, right?
Right, that's right. Yeah. It'll be hosted in Chicago. But no, it's not like he's just going to award a bunch of Chicago people. He's trying to get this to be a nationwide thing to where everybody is, you know, diving into trying to focus on public education. That's his big thing.
That's a really cool thing. I wonder if, does the article happen to mention how to nominate somebody?
Yes. Right now it's kind of through the Social Works website. Mm-hmm. It's socialworks_chi.org.
You're not looking at a piece of paper, by the way.
No.
That's pretty
I'm a fan of Chance the Rapper. I may say his name like a middle-aged white lady, but I'm a fan. But anyway, so yeah, that's his website. And he also has a social media handle, and I'm not so good on those. But yeah, you can start there.
This is phenomenal, in my opinion. You know, we so often revere people in the entertainment community, but not people in the education community. And I'll get on my high horse a little bit here. I even watch in the education community, we often revere the athletes. I mean, if you think about it, and I know we all love football, Tyler announces football. We love it. But every year, signing day is like one of the biggest days in high schools across the entire country. Yeah. And it's a big business. This is nice to see Chance the Rapper, someone in the entertainment community, saying, no, we're going to do what needs to be done. And we're going to find these amazing stories that educators are doing, and we're going to highlight them. And I know they're out there because I'm finding them all the time. So this is really a cool thing.
Well, and my boy Chance, he said that part of what got him interested, or, you know, even turned on to education, is obviously his education and realizing that, you know, he's 24. You know, we have to keep that in mind. You know, I personally think people in their mid-20s are awful. Like, if I had to look at, you know, a range of someone's life, someone
except
in their,
the ones that listen to this show. In their mid,
but what I mean is someone in their mid-20s to late-20s, that's just a different time in people's lives. And I think most people look back and they think, oh, that was a really fun time. But it was probably because they were, like, very egocentric during that time. But he is not, you know, and so he's 24, and he said that, you know, Chicago is like in the summertime, the best time. And that as he was out and about in the summer, he had a lot of resistance. Like, you know, he said two people on two different occasions, you know, threatened to shoot him. And that and these were young teens, you know, and he realized, you know what, this isn't working. Like, and he feels that he is young to be given some of the awards and accolades that he's been given, but he feels like it's because he's supposed to do something with it. And so he does kind of call out the athletes, you know, based on what you're saying. He does kind of call them out and say, what are you doing to give back to your areas? Yeah. Like, we've all got to, or we're just making the divide worse.
You know, I think since you guys are boys, let's get them on the show. Why don't you make that happen?
You know, I don't do Twitter. I need to do Twitter because I think a lot of people really enjoy my tweeting.
I'm sure they will.
But I know that some young ladies from one of the Chicago schools, they tweeted a, like, thank you, you know, at him, I think is how you do it. Maybe you do it at him.
Yeah.
And so anyway, they kind of thanked him for, you know, what he does in their community and just, you know what, a lot of people are famous, but they don't give back. But you show through your actions and, you know, you're just a huge part of our lives and inspiration. And so he like did a
tweeted
tweet
back.
He tweeted back to him. Don't know what it's. I don't know why. I feel like I'm going to like misuse the tense of tweet. Yeah. I don't know.
All right, Tyler, what do you know about the Teachers Lounge? I think you've got something a little bit on the more serious side, do you not?
Yeah, a little bit more serious. You know, this past week, President Trump got rid of or is going to phase out DACA, deferred action for childhood arrivals. And so that is affecting students, but not just students. It's also affecting teachers because there are a lot of teachers that are DACA recipients that are Dreamers. And so the New York Times has a really great article this past week by Liz Robbins. And it's talking about the teachers that are in New York City that are DACA recipients and how it's affecting them. I mean, some of them are, you know, they're able to work through the rest of this school year, but then their DACA protections will run out. And so at the end of the school year, they may have to leave.
And I guess we should clarify, they may run out. We still don't know. It looks like the president's poised to end the program, but I think he's also kind of put it in Congress's hands to see if they can't come up with a better solution, I guess.
So, and you know, politically, who knows if that's the right move to make or the wrong move. I'm not here to judge those things, but there is that, and it seems like a lot of tech companies and a lot of just people in general are really pressuring Congress to get something to happen. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise, but it seems also that they could have pressured Congress to do something without having gotten rid of DACA in the first place. So, you know, I see both sides of this, but really it's one of those unthought of things that I heard this argument the other day, and this one kind of hit me pretty hard. If there's a child in a car seat that and the parents rob a bank, you don't charge the child with a crime. You don't send them to prison. So, you know, if these Dreamers, they're kind of in the same boat. You know, they didn't come to the United States because they wanted to. They came because their parents came. So here they are living, working as teachers. And we've discussed it on the show a number of times. There's a teacher shortage out there. So, you know, sending qualified, good teachers that are bilingual in some cases, and asking them to leave and go back to whatever country they may or may not have come from, you know, that's a tough thing to swallow.
You know, and you're talking about the impact on teachers. And then I guess you have the flip side is some of these teachers may teach in a school that has a big Hispanic population, for say.
Exactly.
And so they have these kids looking at them who might be scared and they might not know what's going to happen in the next 6 to 12 months.
Exactly.
So like, how do you address that?
And, you know, that's as a teacher myself, you know, thinking about that, how do you deal with these kids when they are scared and when they are looking at things that are bigger than themselves? And how do you know, it is hard to deal with it. But there is another article out of the Los Angeles Times. The Times there has this really great it seems like maybe the journalist happened to be in the classroom and listening to this discussion that happened, a discussion just like that. And it was the teacher's name is David Wiltz out there in Los Angeles. And he asked the kids what they knew about it. And these are kids that said, you know, that's my mom. That's my dad, my uncle. That's my family that's going to be deported. And the teacher told them under no certain terms that they would never leave because they would arrest him before they would ever be deported. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and as a teacher, as an educator, I know that it's easy to say that, you know, we'd all say that about our kids, but it's something that a lot of people that don't teach don't always understand. These aren't just kids in my classroom. These are my kids in my classroom. These are, you know, I would do anything for they are my children for the 2 hours that they're in my classroom every day. Those are my kids. And for an elementary school teacher who has those kids every single day for the entire day, you know, that is a family. So yeah, I don't think that this is hyperbole when he says that he would be arrested before he lets anything happen to his students. I believe it.
Well, and honestly, I think so many teachers would have the same, you know, take the same stand. I mean, and so that is scary. And I don't know how you talk to a child about, I mean, you can't just say, well, this is just the way it has to be, because that doesn't make sense, not even to an adult.
Yeah, I think the best thing you can probably do as a teacher is just do what you're trained to do, which is inform your students about what's going on. And as long as you stick to the facts and the current events and make sure the students have an understanding of what's taking place, information is power.
Exactly, yeah. It's a scary thing. And for these teachers that are being affected by it because they themselves are dreamers or that they teach dreamers, you know, I feel for them.
Well, hopefully Congress can work out a solution that, appeases all sides and has a happy ending. We'll certainly continue to follow how it impacts teachers and schools around the country. Did you guys hear about what's happening over in New York City with their lunches?
Yes. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. They are going to be offering free meals for all students. They already had a pretty large group. I think it was about 75% of their students that were going to get a free lunch at the school, and they already did the free breakfast, but now it's all students. And here's really the reason why, and this is what really struck home with me. It comes down to the fact that you take like their councilman in New York City, a guy named Ben Callis. He recounted his own experience and the stigma of being on the subsidized school meal plan. And he said it was so embarrassing and hard for him. He felt like he was choosing between a meal and friends. And that's really sad. Wow. And you know, New York's not the first city to do this. Boston, Chicago, Detroit, Dallas have also done this. But it's great to see a city the size of New York really come online and offer these meals to these kids. And it makes a lot of sense to me.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you can't teach a kid if they're hungry. If they don't have... If they're not getting food, their brains can't work. So this is a key component to education, is making sure that the students are well fed and well taken care of.
I know when I taught at a specific school in my past, I had a student that said over the weekends that he and his brother were hungry because they ate better during the week, because being at the school, they ate breakfast and lunch at the school. But on the weekends, it was hard for them because they didn't have, you know, truly a full meal for breakfast or lunch. And so I know a lot of communities do backpack meals where they kind of secretly slide things in the children's backpacks on a Friday for them to have.
Yeah, it's usually the oldest child, right, that gets it.
Yep. And, a free meal for everybody, great. I mean, how can you complain about that?
Especially New York City prices, you know, if you're thinking about feeding a family in New York City, having at least one more student or one person in your family that's not eating a meal at the bodega down the street, that saves some money too. So that's good for families, good for the economy, good for students. It's a great thing all around.
Yeah, they say that the program in New York will reach an additional 200,000 students. So they already, again, had 75% of them who were qualified for free or reduced lunches. But an extra 200,000 students will now be put on the program, saving families about $300 a year, which I think is an underestimate. I don't know. The $300 is probably based off of like the $1.75 per day, that you would have spent at the cafeteria. But if you're bagging the lunch, you're talking probably more than $1.75 a day. I don't know. Some kids eat a lot.
Some kids do eat a lot. I send my son to school every day without a lunch because he eats the school lunch. Because it's more nutritious, more healthy than anything I would pack for him. I'd probably pack garbage for him if I was to do it myself. And
by garbage, you mean junk food.
I mean junk food, yeah. I mean, not the stuff out of the trash can. But also,
Listen to concerns. So
I can understand that. Yeah. But also it's the convenience factor of not having to worry about, did I pack a lunch today? Oh man, I forgot. So, sending him out the door, knowing that he's going to be well fed, well taken care of, that is a comfort to me. So I know it'll be a comfort to those parents in New York as well.
Well, listen to this, Tyler. I pack my 17-year-old's lunch every morning, which I know I probably shouldn't pack a 17-year-old as lunch, whatever, but two sandwiches plus like chips, two snacks, two drinks. He eats that and he orders the school lunch every day.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I'm in for it.
And I can like go online and see what he ate.
Are you sure he's not getting like bullied and someone's taking his lunch?
I asked him that. I said, like, okay, now, like, honestly, are you giving these sandwiches to somebody else that needs a sandwich? Like, I don't mind making sandwiches for other people. Just, I really need to know, are you eating this much? And he's like, yes, ma'am, because he has soccer first period. So he eats those two sandwiches right after soccer. Yep. And then his lunch isn't until like 12:30. So he says that's like an eternity. And then he eats the school lunch then. I mean, I don't.
I did this when I was in high school. I was the same way. I remember eating. I'd packed my mom. I shouldn't say I. My mom packed for me at least two lunches. I ate one during lunch and then one before practice. And then after practice, came home. And I can't even imagine how much food I know. Would eat then. So
it's gross.
Yeah, they say what, like, boys you pay for insurance and food and girls you pay for weddings. Is that?
I think that sounds about right.
Well, no, for boys you pay out of pocket after insurance because they, you know, so much that they get themselves in trouble with.
Right. That was me knocking on wood, by the way. So are you guys ready for the bright idea?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
We have our first return guest on the Class Dismissed podcast. Ooh. I don't know if you guys remember back in episode 10, we interviewed James Gibran, and he was the gentleman out of Houston, Texas, who had made this incredible aquarium and put it in the cafeteria of Houston. Well, as we all know, we've been dealing with Harvey, and his school was there. So we're going to catch up with him and see how things are going. Our guest in today's Bright Idea segment is our first two-time guest on Class Dismissed, but we wish it were under different circumstances. You may remember James Gibran as the aquarium guy back in episode 10. He's the teacher that pulled together the resources to make a massive aquarium in a school's cafeteria and teach marine biology. That school, of course, is A. Leif Elsick High School in Houston. And as everyone knows, the challenges that Houston's been facing due to Hurricane Harvey. James, how are you hanging in there?
Hey, Nick, I'm doing pretty good. Today was the first day we had kids back in our school today, so it was a little bit of a different day for us. It was rough, but we're doing all right.
So first, let's start with today's the first day back in school. How many kids showed up? Was it full attendance, or are there a lot of people not back?
I had about 90% attendance in all my classes, so a pretty good amount.
Is there a lot of talk about Harvey in the classroom, and kind of what are the stories that you're hearing from your students?
So we, as a faculty, decided last week, the faculty came back on Thursday. So we decided that we would go on a soft start back today and give the kids a chance to, you know, tell their stories to their friends and to us. And so I did get a chance to hear a little bit from my kids. And for the most part, our kids in our area did pretty good. There were some pretty bad stories, though, you know, here and there. But in our district itself, the majority of our students did pretty well.
As an outsider, I think a lot of the countries like me, you know, you say Houston's flooded and we think the entire city of Houston's flooded, but Houston is a massive city. Kind of draw a picture for us about how bad it is. Is it 50% of the city, 20% of the city? What's it like?
Well, so the city is huge, from east to west, north to south. To get from one side to the other, you're going to drive at least 40 or 50 miles in any direction. It's a really huge city. It's not a very vertical city. And then that's just, you know, the city proper. Once we start talking about all the suburbs, then we you know, Houston, the greater Houston area is a really big community. But still, right now we have areas that are not only flooded, but like, just you can't even drive around most of like the middle of the city. From east to west, we have a main bayou running through our city called Buffalo Bayou, and it runs from a couple of the reservoirs. You may or may not have heard of them from the news, but pretty much it bisects our city from east to west. And along that corridor, there's almost no north-south travel still, except for just a very few roads that can go through, just because they're not flooded right now. But most of the roads going north and south over that Buffalo Bayou corridors are closed still, which is causing a tremendous amount of traffic, more than usual. And not only that, there's a lot of houses in that area that are still underwater.
So there is a lot of homes and businesses that where the waters have not receded yet.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, when you hear on the news that Houston's underwater, the whole city is not underwater, but we haven't seen anything like this. I don't know if we've ever seen anything like this.
I guess Allison, Tropical Storm back, I want to say that was like late 90s maybe. There was some flooding, I think, from that. But this is by far worse from what I understand.
Yeah, this, I mean, this is exceeding every floodplain that, that anyone's put on the map for us. I mean, the subdivision I live in has never, ever, ever been flooded. And it's been around since the 70s. And I had water halfway up my front yard, my front lawn.
So you and I emailed, I think it was August 29th. So it was probably like 2 or 3 days after Harvey hit. And, mm-hmm. and you were describing in the email that you were actually, I guess you have a boat and you were going around helping people out, were you not?
Yeah, I have a canoe, so I wasn't able to do as much as a lot of people did. But a lot of my coworkers, you know, they had some serious issues, and I was trying to contact them and help them best I could get themselves out of their neighborhoods. A lot of the neighborhoods were just closed down to any vehicles. It was too deep for a lot of vehicles, even my truck, to get through. So I helped a few of my coworkers get some of their things and their family members out of their communities. And Houston in general, it was really kind of a, you know, it was a really bad situation. It still is, but it was, on the same token, it was kind of nice to see our community really pull together and help each other. And not only that, I mean, there people came from all over the country to help out. I met people from Florida that came out. I met people from Arizona. I mean, just people flocked to Houston just to help us out. And it was a really, really kind of neat thing to see.
What's the emotional state of your colleagues? Because while it sounds like a lot of your students were maybe in a higher area and were okay, and I'm saying that gently, mm-hmm. you know, teachers can be anywhere within the city and then commuting in. So I imagine there's some teachers out there who had it a little harder.
Yeah. So just in the science department itself, we had, I think, 3 or 4 teachers whose houses were underwater. I say underwater, but maybe like anywhere from 1 foot to 4 feet of water in their homes. Mm-hmm. So they right now are living in hotels, and some of them are, you know, lodging with other friends, families, or coworkers. But yeah, it was.
And they're back at school today?
Most of them, yeah. Most of them are. In the science department, one teacher is not. I know that. But we had outside of science, we had several other teachers also affected. So there's a little bit of sadness in that. And but at the same time, like, and it's not just my school, my district that did this, but I mean, we see postings on Facebook here where, you know, people from our school and friends and family just really rallied together to go help those people out and pull out carpet from their houses, pull down sheetrock, and move all their old wet furniture out of their homes just to try to get it to dry out. So, I mean, it was a real sense of community going on here, and it's like I said, it's kind of neat to see, but in a sad way at the same time.
The school itself, what condition was the school in? Did it take on any damage?
We took on some very, very light damage, mostly from like leaks in the roof. It happened, but in a neighboring school district, Houston ISD, they had, I think, over 50 schools that were completely shut down because water was in the buildings.
All right, the question that I've kind of been dreading to ask, you put all this work into this aquarium. What's the status of the aquarium?
So the first time I got to see the aquarium was last Thursday, and the status was good. There's no damage to the aquarium. We did lose power off and on throughout the week and a half. I only suffered one casualty. I lost one fish throughout the whole thing. So
wow,
I think that's pretty good.
So they managed to have food and the, I guess the aerators weren't running in the aquarium and so forth, but they were okay.
Right. Yeah. I had the system on an automatic feeder, so the food wasn't an issue. And, yeah, they did pretty good.
What do listeners need to know about Houston? What do you guys need or don't need? And you may not be speaking specific to yourself, but just from what you're hearing about the community, what message is not getting out?
So I think that the main thing that people are needing right now, we're past the stage. Even recently, I saw people trying to come to Houston with boats. We're way past that stage. But if people want to look up some things to do for individual school districts within Houston, and send donations because to the school district. I know my school district and several other school districts are setting up donation centers where they're opening up pantries for not only students but staff as well that were affected. So if you want to contact some of the school districts, some of them are A-Leaf ISD, that's mine, Houston ISD, Fort Bend ISD, Spring Branch ISD, Cypress Fairbanks ISD, any of the school districts here, I think for the most part, all of them have some kind of donation system going where you can donate to them. It goes directly towards the kids and the staff that were affected.
Do you hear of anything specific that people need? Is it food or is it, you know, toiletries? Like, what are people saying has been kind of a challenge?
From the limited contact I've had directly with people, it's mostly like meals. Like people have been saying that, you know, that they've been eating a lot of like just kind of garbage food and they kind of miss like a nice meal. So food is a big one right now.
So where do you go from here?
I think what we really need to do is just be able to kind of like restore a sense of normality to the situation. In a way that's not callous, kind of just continue on as we were, just not let it really drag the kids down and make them feel like the year is over or pointless right now. It's almost like a brand new start to the year. So it's just, I think it's important for us just to move forward in a caring way, in an understanding way, and know that there's going to be some hiccups along the road still, because this is not over. And even though the water's receding, the storm's gone, the effects of it are going to be felt for, you know, quite some time. So we just need to be considerate of that, but still maintain a good march forward.
All right. Well, James, Jabron, again, I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk to us on your first day of school as well. And certainly we'll be keeping you and all your classmates and your colleagues in our thoughts.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for reaching out to us and seeing how we're doing. I appreciate your concern.
All right. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
That's going to do it for episode 16 of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you, so if you want to send us an idea or comment, remember that you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So if you like what you heard today, please be sure and subscribe to the show, and we'd also love it if you leave us a 5-star review. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast or on Twitter. Just search for us by typing in Class Dismiss. On behalf of Tyler with School Status and Lissa representing all the teachers out there, I'm Nick Ortigo, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class Dismissed.